Voices of the Temple, official podcast of the Temple of Witchcraft, exploring mystery and magic through love, will, and wisdom. Hosted by Adam Sartwell. Greetings and welcome to Voices of the Temple. I just wanted to start out with our invocation and get us all into a nice sacred space. So take a deep breath with me. And come into the present moment as we call to the Great Spirit. We call to the two who move as one through the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. I call upon the goddess, maiden, mother, and crone, past, present, and future, creator, sustainer, and destroyer, weaver of the web. I call to the god, Lord of light and Lord of darkness, God of the green and gold, God of the horn and the red, singer of the song. Be with us now and forever, so mote it be. Blessed be everyone. And I just wanted to move into our new segment because we have lots of things to discuss today. Tonight is right about now, while I'm recording, is probably the full moon ritual with Alex Wright. These full moon rituals will pretty much exemplify what has been learned in the witchcraft classes and apply it practically. It's not sort of creating a ritual group or something like that. It's more where the people who come to it will be participating in the actual event and doing parts and things like that. So those who want to sign up have to be honored or ministerial members of the temple. As it was explained to me, the focus is really witches who have gone through the courses and things like that, coming together, working in that modality, and, you know, sort of making up what they want to do as they go along, not really about someone coming up, you know, to the circle and teaching or doing the circle for the people who are the participants. There's only there's a maximum of 13 participants, and if you want to get in to do that, you have to write the Pisces minister at pisces@templeofwitchcraft.org. And if you have any questions, also email her as well. And they are from 7 to 9 p.m. So if you want to sign up, it's first come, first serve on that. And coming up very soon, this weekend actually, May 1st, on Saturday, we have two events. There's Beltane and Fairy Wisdom and Magic with Christopher Penzack, Saturday, May 1st, and it will be from 3 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. If you want to be there, please arrive by 2:45 p.m. to check in at the Salem Masonic Building at 107 Main Street, Salem, New Hampshire, 03079-3104. There's a sliding scale price for the workshop, and you also get to go to the Beltane ritual after. It's $25 to $35. The little blurb they have about it is, "Come discover the mysterious world of the Fae. Stories of fairies, spirits intimately connected with the land are found in cultures all over the world. They are sometimes playful, beautiful, mischievous, or terrible. And in the modern era, the word fairy or fairy can mean nature spirits, elementals, divas, ancestor spirits, or otherworldly shining ones. Fairies act as guides and partners to mystics and magicians, deeply attuned to the power of the land, and have a long history of fairy faith, spiritual practices in the Celtic traditions. Learn about their particular relationship with witches or the elder faith. In this interactive workshop, you will be introduced to a modern cosmology of fairies, taking into account old and new experiences, techniques to attune with fairy allies, including meditation, ritual, and offerings, to build a bridge to fairies and to evoke healing and balance in both our world and the world of the fae. So if you want to pre-register for that, email sagittarius@templeofwitchcraft.org. Like I said before, if you show up to the fairy workshop and pay the dues there, you will be able to go to the Beltane workshop after. There will be a short dinner break in between, so you can go to dinner in the local area and then come back for the Beltane celebration. If you're just going to come to the celebration, it's a sliding donation of $15 to $25. It also is happening on Saturday, May 1st, from 7 to 9 p.m. Be sure to be there by 6:45 to check in. It is also in the same spot in the Salem Masonic Building. Alex and Wright and Christopher Penzack are going to do the celebration for Beltane and be our aficionados that day. I'll just read to you their little blurb because it could sum up Beltane much better than I can. Beltane honors the sacred marriage between the Lord and the Lady, dancing the maypole. We'll weave our hopes and wishes for fertility and abundance as we turn the wheel and thank the God and Goddess for their blessings. Beltane is one of the two times of the year when the veil between worlds is thinnest, and we can communicate with those on the other side. It is associated with the Fae, as the Queen of Fairy leads her people back to their from their winter lands. We will each have an offering to make back to our take back to our homes and leave for the fairies in hopes that their mischief passes us by and their blessings fill our lives. Please come in all your ritual finery with bells on if you have them. All denominations are open to come, and to pre-register or for more information, email pisces@templeofwitchcraft.org. Now, during the event, there will be a food drive. The Cancer Ministry puts that on. Please bring a non-perishable food item for donation to the local food pantry. Let us embody the pagan virtues of charity and hospitality to those in need. There will be a raffle. Tickets are going to be $2 each, or three for $5, and all proceeds go to the temple for which is a non-for-profit foundation. I put up some very crocheted items last time. I don't have anything ready for this time around, but there will be some really cool stuff because there are plenty of witches who are contributing to it. There will be refreshments. Please join us after for beverage and potluck of snacks. We've gathered up, you know, finger foods like veggie dips, fruits, and other cold dishes to share, as well as cold beverages. If you'd like to donate something or help out by bringing some supplies, cups, napkins, etc., please contact the Cancer Ministry at cancer@templeofwitchcraft.org. Speaking of the Cancer Ministry, they will be holding their women's circles the second Saturday of every month from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Please arrive at 6:45 p.m. to check in and, you know, give those 15 minutes of beautifulness to get all settled. They are all going to be at the Dove Star Institute, 50 Whitehall Road, Hooksett, New Hampshire, 03106, for those of you who are going to MapQuest it. There's a sliding scale donation of $15 to $25. All women are welcome at the events, and they come together to in a celebration of the goddess, the elements, and the mysteries of the divine. To pre-register or for more information, email cancer@templeofwitchcraft.org. And please remember that all of our events are not put on by the people who have the space that we are renting. So don't call DevStar. Don't call Salem Masonic Building. Please email us at our templeofwitchcraft.org addresses. Thank you. Now, I know I have to go on into my explanation of who I am recording with today and doing a interview with. I'm actually interviewing the Sagittarius minister. You know, I'm throwing a kink in the works here. Though our Taurus minister is very involved in horse shows, and she runs, like, her own farm. So she really can't be bothered right now during spring, where there's planting, there's horse shows, there's all sorts of craziness going on in her life. So she and our Sagittarius minister, Christopher Panzak, switched this year. So I'll be getting back to her and her amazing eco-friendly ways in Sagittarius instead of Taurus. But we are talking to a very Taurus man, Mr. Christopher Panzak, and he's going to tell us all about what the temple's going to be doing with their education and their teachings for the next, practically the next coming year. Oh, and that reminds me, during our temple head retreat, the Taurus minister asked me to ask if there was anyone who wanted to help her out with some of her Taurus duties. She needs a nice deputy to put things together for a healing ritual for the Earth, and sort of bringing that psychic energy to the Earth. If there's anyone who would like to fill in that role, please email her at taurus@templeofwitchcraft.org. We had our head minister retreat just last weekend on Saturday, and it was a great event. We got a lot of work done and planned out for the year. One of the things that is coming into being is June 5th, there will be a Temple Fest 2010, and I can't tell too much about it without, you know, them writing something up for me to tell you, but it will be a blast. It's going to be open to those who are members of the temple, and it's going to be a fun time from what we talked about. And the retreat was really a great time. We had a little potluck of our own, and I brought my first pies. I've never made pies before, and everyone was very happily eating them, so I didn't get to take home any of the raspberry pie I made, but I got some apples, so I'm good, I'm good. So I'll have some pictures up on the podcast so you can see what it looked like, thanks to Ramadanu. So just to move on, we'll move right into our interview. All right, I am here with Christopher Panzak, Sagittarius minister and founder of the Temple of Witchcraft. If you want to say hi.
Hi.
All right.
Nice to be here.
Yes. So my first question is, as Sagittarius minister, you head the teaching and education ministries. How did you get started teaching, and why did you start?
I got started very reluctantly. The joke is, whenever I tell the story about how I got into teaching, is that I wanted to be a rock star. I didn't want to be a witchcraft teacher. But it really came through a lot of coercion from the goddess, I think is the best way I'd put it.
Yeah.
I ended up training in witchcraft in college and going into the music industry, and through school and through business, a lot of people noticed some beneficial changes for me and wanted to know what was going on, and I was really hesitant to tell them, oh, it was witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And those that I finally did trust enough to say, I've been studying witchcraft and it's not what you think it is, and you know, this is what it's been like, were really fascinated by it and wanted to know more. And At first, through college, I ended up doing a study group that was like a once-a-month moon group and meditation group, and we did past life regressions and some simple spell work and simple scrying type of stuff, but it wasn't very formal. And as that progressed, I ended up finding that everyone was looking for some type of structure, some type of system, some type of schooling. And I was trained first by a family friend who was a mentor of mine for many years, and then she brought me to her teacher, who was Lori Cabot, and I took the Cabot training in the first and second degree at that time. And at the time, Lori was not necessarily teaching. She was transitioning out of Crow Haven Corner and at Pyramid Books, and it was kind of a tumultuous time in her life, and it was hard to pin down when the classes were going to be. And so the people who are in my moon group were just like, well, can't you just teach us something? Can't you just show us the basics? Can't you just, you know, give us a taste of it? And that became the Inner Temple of Witchcraft class. And once they got through that, they were like, okay, what's next? And, you know, the second one was the Outer Temple of Witchcraft class. And a lot of it was really based on what I learned in the Cabot tradition and what I learned from my first mentor. And my mentor wasn't teaching publicly at that time either. And then we got to that kind of strange role where we ended that, and they're like, okay, well, what's next after that? And I had to start sharing more of my own personal research and the things that interest me, and through that developed the five courses of witchcraft and a lot of the subsidiaries and the tarot classes and the astrology classes and, you know, the kind of specialized topics. But I really didn't start teaching fully and really start teaching full-time until I was in the music industry. And you know, I really loved my job. I worked at Fort Apache Records, and I was part of the record label, and it was a studio and an artist management company. And we kind of built up to a place of, you know, good success and stability. And then one by one, each of us started getting laid off because the financial aspect of it wasn't there. And I was really concerned about what to do and job. And, you know, I felt like it was a time of transition. And should I move to New York or should I move to L.A.? And my partner, Steve, was supportive of that, but I could tell he didn't necessarily want to move to New York or L.A. And he really got into, we got into a place of kind of questioning what to do. And every time I would meditate, I would have a vision of the goddess, who's my matron, Maka, come to me. And her face would be right in my face, and she'd say, you need to teach more, and then disappear. And I'd be stumped out of my meditation. And then I'd go to meditate again, and I'd get that face immediately, and you need to teach more, and then the meditation would end. So finally I happened to say, okay, you know, you need me to teach more, get me more time, you know, I'll be happy to teach more, even though it's not really what I want to do, but I've got a job, and I've got my music career, and my songwriting, and I've got a relationship, and I've got my circle of friends, so you tell me when I need to teach more. And I was kind of belligerent about it. And 3 days later, I lost my job. And I went to meditate and try to figure out, well, what do I do now? Do I really move to LA? Do I move to New York? Do I try to stick around the Boston music scene? And the only advice I got was, you need to teach more. And so when I put out a flyer for meditation classes, I had a full house. And that's when the witchcraft classes really started taking off. And then I got invited to speak at a shop that was just outside the Boston area called Unicorn Books. They were doing a Wheel of the Year celebrations there. And someone got sick at the last minute. And my astrology teacher at the time was the owner of it. And she asked me to fill in, like, the next day to do a Beltane celebration. It was, like, for 4 or 5 people. I was super nervous about it. But it went well, and went well enough that they asked me to come back and teach and do more Wheel of the Year rituals. And after a while, I was kind of their main witchcraft teacher, and things flourished from there. So it's a little coercion. You know, sometimes you get what you need, not necessarily what you ask for. If I had a conscious decision in it, I would have been, you know, traveling the world and doing music and you know, being a performer, and now I'm traveling the world doing witchcraft and all that. So sort of the vision came true. You know, I used to joke that before my job was making flyers and, you know, booking gigs and traveling around, and now my job still is making flyers and booking gigs and traveling around just for something else.
So that music background really helped you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Music was really helpful for me, because before I got involved heavily and seriously in music, I used to joke that I would do classical by day and heavy metal by night, but the mix of it was really good for me, because I was able to really get my kind of stage confidence. Before that, I was really uncomfortable speaking in front of people, and once you've been, you know, both speaking, singing in front of a classical group of teachers, and then going to a biker bar and, you know, singing behind chicken wires, people are throwing beer bottles. Anything that can happen in a New Age store or at a festival isn't that bad. And it really helped me with the idea of marketing and copyright and understanding intellectual property, and the way the music industry works is somewhat similar to the way the publishing industry works. So that was really helpful for me too.
And I know you're not alone in that. A lot of, there are a couple of teachers who are rock stars in their own right. So, now that we've heard where your teachings sort of started, how have they evolved into the point where they are now, where you're teaching a tradition of the five books and the five levels? And
that, you know, that was another thing that was really reluctant for me. When I got involved in witchcraft, my mentors and Lori and everybody really emphasized the science aspect of witchcraft and the metaphysical practice and the philosophy. And although it was recognized as a religion, it wasn't, the focus of it wasn't so much religion. Mm-hmm. And so when I first started it, it was more of a collection of techniques. It was more of a system. And after I'd been teaching a few years, it got a little weird. Mm-hmm. And it got weird because then I found people coming back to me, you know, asking, I heard, you know, my friend is a so-and-so, is a Panzacian witch. How do I sign up for that? Or, you know, they're Christopherian and the Cabot lineage. How do I do that? And that's not what I set out to be. I never used those names. I never used those terms. But people were seeking to identify with something through mm-hmm. studying, whether it be through the books or whether it be directly with me. They kind of leave me and kind of put their own spin on it. And I felt really uncomfortable with that. In fact, I used to joke about it to have people not do it, but I found the more that I joked about it, the more people still started to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think while named traditions are really important at the time and place that they came about, mm-hmm. I don't think we need more traditions named after people, and I certainly don't think we need a tradition named after me. So for me, it was always the Temple of Witchcraft teachings and the Temple of Witchcraft system. And I found that people really bereft of a larger community. Not everybody who took the classes really wanted to go on and start their own coven. Some did, mm-hmm. you know, but most, it wasn't kind of the lineage bearer that most Gardnerians and Alexandrians and various people feel once they've graduated to high priestess or high priest level. For me, I felt like, you know, do as you will. It's if you graduated and you wanted to lead a coven, you wanted to teach classes, you know, nobody really gave me the authority to start other than my spiritual connection. It wasn't a teacher patting me on the head and saying, go out, you have my blessing. Mm-hmm. I just kind of fell into it. I figured people would fall into what they needed to, but that wasn't always the case. And through encouragement and feedback through other people, I decided to kind of move the system, and it still is a system that can be used on its own, but also start building community around that system and to see it as a tradition. You know, I really was reluctant about seeing it as a tradition, but I really look at it as an Aquarian tradition. So it's mm-hmm. really about a community and a teaching system that holds a space so people can make their own connections with the divine, rather than anybody's authority kind of stemming off of me.
Mm-hmm.
So as the years have gone by, it's become much more colored with art and poetry and music. And so the core system is still there and the core principles are still there. But my mission right now is more about the metaphysical and spiritual culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I've added a lot more art to it. I've added a lot more, like we have a personal book of shadows and I share a lot of my own mythos and my own way of seeing the universe that fits into the system. But before, I used to let people figure out their own mythos.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I still don't encourage that, but I share a lot more of my personal practice to people.
Yeah.
So that's kind of developed. And I look at it much more today as a mystery system than mm-hmm. I did before. I think of it much more as each level has its own mystery. Each level has its own kind of test and pivotal experience. And not everybody's going to get the same thing out of each level. But you might go through all five levels and feel like I'm really Gnostic in the sense that I want direct knowledge and the ceremonial stuff really appeals to me, or I'm really a shamanic witch and I really like the ecstatic drumming and mm-hmm. the spirit work, or I'm really, you know, a simple kind of folks witch and I like making things and I like simple ceremony and I like observing nature. And you might find that your path is a mix of all those things, but I think the most pivotal experiences are the ones that kind of open you to your own practice and figuring out what works for you.
Okay. While you were speaking, I got this sort of image of, like, a banyan tree.
Yeah.
And how they reach up and then they grow a root down.
Yeah.
And then grow another tree. And each one is connected to the other, but each one is sort of their own personal tree.
Yeah.
And taken in a different direction, sort of spreading out. But yet they're all sort of connected to that divine center tree.
I think that's a good image for it, definitely.
So, since you're in charge of all the teachings and what's going on with the teachers, what teachings are you and others who are in the temple offering this year for the public?
Well, we've got a lot of things going on for the temple. A lot of the physical classes are based in the New England area, primarily New Hampshire and Massachusetts, but we also have online offerings for people. So what we're going to be doing is opening up registration for our mystery school and seminary, and we're going to have a new session starting in the fall Hopefully by a little after Beltane, we'll probably have all the registration material together. So mm-hmm. we'll be doing year-long online classes for Witchcraft 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be doing in-person classes in Salem, New Hampshire for Witchcraft 1, and that's going to be led by one of our high priestesses, Alex Wright.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be leading a Witchcraft 3 year-long class in Salem in person. For kind of taste classes, if you just want to come in and, you know, get a flavor for it and you know, come in one night, we're going to be doing a series of classes and lectures and workshops prior to our Wheel of the Year events in Salem, New Hampshire. So if the event usually starts at 7 o'clock, we might be doing things at 2 to 5 or 3 to 6, somewhere around there. The first one will be this Beltane, and it's going to be my fairy magic workshop. And then for Midsummers, I'm going to be co-leading a ritual and workshop on protection magic, both physical and psychic, with our Aries minister, Michael Cantone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very looking forward to that. We're going to have, in the rest of the year, things like mask making, ecstatic body postures, a drumming and singing workshop, an ancestral reverence workshop, healing workshops, a queer spirituality workshop. That takes us into 2011, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to be starting a series at a local shop in the area, most likely Myths and Maidens in Manchester. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do like a once-a-month lecture, Temple of Witchcraft lecture series. So it'll be kind of like, we've dubbed it Christopher Penzack and Friends. So I'll probably do the first one. And we'll have different people come out and do a topic that's somehow connected to the temple, but might not necessarily be a specific ministry. So we might, like, I have one person set up for Celtic witchcraft. And we might have someone come out and speak about homeopathy and self-care and that type of work, or doing chakras.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also be doing teachings at Temple Fest 2010 this year.
Yes.
We're going to be doing a little festival in June, June 5th, I think it is, in Derry. And we'll have lots of classes there. So we're still figuring out the schedule for that.
Mm-hmm.
We've got lots of stuff going on.
yeah, we do. So your ministry's inner work is the connection to spirit and its realms, and the hidden company. In your opinion, how might our listeners connect to these guides in their daily practice?
That's a tough one, because it's something that's really kind of come through my own research and my own personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably the first thing to start with is exactly what is the hidden company, or another name we use for them is the Mighty Dead. And a lot of witchcraft traditions reference the Mighty Dead, but not a lot of people really talk about who they are. Some people think of them just as the ancestors, and that's not really what I mean when I say the Mighty Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think of them as the masters of our tradition of witchcraft as a whole. I really kind of came to them through my work in theosophy and through what people in the New Age world called light work or ascension work. And we do these meditations and visions and rituals on the Ascended Masters. And I was getting, like, Greek priestesses and little old ladies from Cornwall and, mm-hmm. you know, much more of the cunning man and cunning woman and pagan world,
mm-hmm.
Where everybody else was getting Jesus and Mary and Saint Germain and Kuan Yin.
Mm-hmm.
And that really kind of made me explore, well, who are the masters of our tradition? And another name that comes, I think, from the 1734 tradition is the Hidden Company.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that a lot. So how you relate to them, it's really, part of it is through intention and petition and prayer. It can be through visualization. It can be through just kind of holding them in your hearts. I think the first experience I had with it is, and a lot of people have it once I describe it, is when you cast a circle,
mm-hmm.
when you can feel the gods within the circle and the spirits you've called within the circle, and you can feel the four quarter guardians at the four directions. But there's other kind of luminous presences gathering at the edge that are kind of watching and supportive, but not necessarily interfering or taking action.
Mm-hmm.
Those presences are the hidden company. So, you know, when you feel them, inviting them more into your life when you're doing circle, inviting them into the circle, inviting them to be active participants, I think it could be as simple as an invocation in your next moon ritual to say, I welcome the mighty dead of our tradition into the circle and see what you feel and see what comes up. Doing meditations to them, one of the things that I really like is go into what I call the Grove of the Hidden Company, and it's imagining and envisioning going through a doorway within your heart, a central flame within your heart, or you can use a candle as well, but going to a grove that's like the Witch's Sabbat. You know, it's a big fire that you envision in the middle of a forest or a field or clearing, and having the witches of all different times and traditions dancing and adoring that secret fire. And joining the dance. And as you join the dance, you'll start to interact with these different masters, and one might pull you aside and share something with you. And it's really kind of like the timeless dance that we're all a part of. That's become a big part of my teachings. It's a little bit more of what I get into in Witchcraft 5 in the High Priestess level, because really what we're trying to train to be is conduits for those otherworldly priestesses, to be what the ceremonial magicians call a contacted group and a contacted tradition. But I think those are some simple ways to work with them. Whenever you do ritual, to not only remember your ancestors, your blood ancestors, but your spiritual ancestors, these mighty dead, and to ask them to come to your dreams, that could be another way that could be very helpful, just putting an intention and placing that intention slip under your pillow at night and seeing what comes to you. Hmm. So just some simple ways to start out.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I think it's very interesting that it sort of bridges the gaps of time between, you know, different witchcraft traditions, and really opens us up to getting more from spirit and bringing it into our manifest world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm different people have different ideas about what witchcraft is and how to define it and what culture owns that word.
Mm-hmm.
But I think of witchcraft as a vocation. You know, I think it's a spiritual calling, but also a profession.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've had witches in every culture before we had the word,
mm-hmm.
you know. And when I think of my ancestors as witches, that's who I think of. So I think of Stone Age. I think of Middle East. I think of Greece. I think of France and Britain. I think of, you know, certain Native American shamans and Mexican mm-hmm. curandos and, you know, all these different figures, Asian herbalists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all kind of fit into our tradition. I've met all sorts of those figures at this grove. You know, it's kind of a European image of the witch's sabbat, but I think that's a powerful image for us. But I think sabbats, we still use that name for the Wheel of the Year holidays, you know,
yeah.
So I think it's a powerful image.
And it's an image that opens doors to different places around the world and
mm-hmm.
Communion throughout with the spirits of those ascended sort of masters
right.
around the world.
Yep, absolutely. And I think it also helps us kind of face some shadow stuff, because that is an image of witchcraft from a time where, you know, we think, oh, everybody thought witchcraft was satanic and evil, and, you know, they're
mm-hmm.
out performing these black masses out in the woods. Well, no, if they were celebrating out in the woods, it was probably somewhat similar to what we do today, you
yeah.
know, but that image can help us confront our own fears and phobias
mm-hmm.
about witchcraft.
Yeah. What is it like moving into a place where you're not the only teacher for the tradition?
That's actually been quite relieving, I have to say. Our primary teacher that's been helping me out right now is our High Priestess, Alex Wright.
Mm-hmm.
She's been doing all of the Wheel of the Year ceremonies with me for a number of years and has been like the first official teacher in our mystery school, and she's been focusing on teaching people level one.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll be going through all the different levels and offering her own workshops and her moon circles. So I really am excited to have someone that, you know, I implicitly trust to know does a really great job. And I'm really excited for the next couple of batches of priests and priestesses that we have kind of coming out of the oven, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
That will have the opportunity to be ordained. And the ordained ministers, if they so choose, will have the opportunity to run their own groups or run their own classes or become faculty members of our mystery school. So I'd love to see, you know, more official teachers of the tradition all across the country. And starting that now has been, you know, quite inspiring and relieving at the same time, because eventually I want to focus on other material and other classes, and I'm really interested in training ministers and getting ordained ministers and trying to deepen our education for that. So if we had lots of people doing the foundational work, there's actually an old ceremonial traditional saying that you have to train your replacement before you can advance. You know, and that idea that's one of the reasons why in a lot of traditional covens that they'd take the second degrees to teach the first degrees, and they take the third degrees to teach the second degrees, and, you know,
yeah.
once you got that experience, then you were able to go out and start your own group. And in ceremonial magic, it's kind of the same thing. You couldn't really advance to the next office until you were able to teach the next person. Even in our views of Aleister Crowley's Silver Star Order, you know, there's this idea that your teacher was always one rung above you, you know, and then once
yeah.
you were able to pass on, you had to be able to pass on and bring your student up with it as well, or get someone else.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you have to really be able to train your replacement. And I think in our day of metaphysical classes at bookstores and teacher trainings that are not hand-to-mouth and mouth-to-ear and, you know, hand-to-hand, that sometimes gets lost. Like, I've taught lots of students and I've encouraged people to teach if they want to, but there hasn't been a sense of really grooming other people to teach and being fully prepared for that. And I was never really fully prepared for that. So it feels good to be able to give people that.
Yeah. To sort of give back what you didn't get.
Yeah.
Or did get from the goddess, but...
Right. I think a lot of my teachings have been, you know, whether it be classes or even prep work or even the temple itself, has been about, well, what do I feel is missing? What would I have liked to have had? Yeah. And how can I create that? And then if the next generation can create what they feel is missing, then we can kind of keep that cycle going and it evolves.
So part of Sagittarius is creating teaching materials. What are you doing about that?
Oh, well, that's very exciting, too. We've actually set up a separate company to help support the temple, but also be its own thing, and that's called Copper Cauldron Productions, or Copper Cauldron Publishing, depending on the branch of it. And we're going to be putting out a variety of books, audio recordings, and also products, which you're involved in the product side.
Yes, I'm involved in the product side.
So we're looking to put together, some of them are going to be specific temple theology books, and things that are a little bit more artistic and things that are a little bit more grimoire-oriented and specific to temple theology. So they're not necessarily, you know, this is a witchcraft book for everyone and will fit everyone. And it's something specific to what we're doing. So our first book is going to be coming out in the fall, and it's called The Three Rays of Witchcraft, Will, Love, and Wisdom in the Garden of the Gods. And it's kind of something specific to temple theology. It's really about the three paths of initiation and the three powers. And I think one of the ways you become the mighty dead is you have to simultaneously hold the consciousness of love and your divine will, and through that find divine wisdom. And, you know, some paths focus on one and some paths focus on another. But I think until you get all three in proportion, you know, you don't really move to that next step. So I'll be comparing those concepts and giving witchcraft-specific exercises and rituals that will deal with, you know, really relating to those energies and comparing them to theosophy and comparing them to ceremonial magic and shamanism and drawing from both Wicca and what people call traditional craft or pre-Gardnerian craft and, you know, kind of looking at all those different areas and seeing how do they suit us today as modern witches.
Okay. So past that book, though, what future books can we look forward to?
Well, the first couple that'll be specific for temple theology, the next one after The Three Rays, will be on plant spirit familiars. And it'll be specific teachings. Most people are familiar with the idea of animal familiars or totem animals. But we teach a lot about relating to the green world and relating to the actual intelligence of plants. And I believe a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people have a guiding teacher plant or teacher tree. And we're going to talk about those ways of communing with the green world, how to heal using the spirit of plants, how to be taught by using the spirit of plants, specifically getting into some of the more dangerous, what they call the banes, things like Datura and Belladonna and Mandrake, and how to work with them safely and spiritually, but to still work with them. So I think a lot of people tend to avoid working with them because they're labeled as toxic, but sometimes the most toxic plants are the most spiritual. And also the teachings of the trees and all the healing herbs as well. You know, there's wonderful herbs that are beneficial to us, not just toxic.
Yeah.
But really getting into that, and that kind of culminates with a teaching that I guide people through called the teachings or the rituals of the Green Devil. And that's about the dark side of the green man and the dark side of nature and kind of going through the underworld, through that side of nature, through the mushrooms, through the rot, through the fall time, the fall seasons. So... and then after that, we're hoping to do a book that's just kind of swirling around my head right now, but a book specifically on the Mighty Dead and how to work with the Hidden Company.
So those are the ones that are coming up?
Yep, those are the three that are specific to Copper Cauldron. We're actually thinking of also doing some anthologies. And the anthologies will be opportunities for people to do larger size articles, for us to kind of check out new authors and for us to get more a wider audience and getting people who are interested in a specific topic to be the editors and directors of it. So it's not just all my writings, but in that way we can start encouraging other writers that are temple members and finding some outside writers. So I'd like to do an anthology of people's experiences with plant spirits. We've also talked about aspects of an anthology that incorporates the shared experience that many people have with the goddess, both from a pagan perspective and a Christian perspective through Mary and those kind of images that travel throughout the whole world, and perhaps doing something on a ceremonial anthology.
One of the things that I've always found fascinating myself are stories of manifestation. And I always thought that would be a very interesting book. So I'm just suggesting it now.
Perhaps you'll be the editor for our manifestation anthology.
Yeah, I've always thought it was funny because I've asked on this program a couple of times whether people have any stories of like a marvelous manifestation where they got more than they bargained for.
Yeah.
Which I think every witch has had that experience if they've even cast a spell. And some have had it without even having to cast the spell. So
I had a friend when I first started teaching who owned a New Age shop and didn't identify as a witch, but she would end every spell I taught her how to do with, I asked for this or something better, and her spells never worked, but she always got some beautiful manifestation, like, the next day.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah.
That fit the need, but may not have been the exact thing that she
wanted.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, we've finished up all of my questions for today. Do you have anything else you want to share with our listeners?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the Sagittarian ministry is just really going deeper with education. So whether you're a part of the temple or you're interested in the temple or you're in your own tradition or kind of studying on your own, I think it can be easy to kind of sit where you are. And someone had recently said to me who owned a shop or worked in a shop in witchcraft that, you know, people learn witchcraft and then, you know, they get bored buying books and they get bored doing everything with it because, you know, they learned everything. And that just struck me so crazy. It was like a little lightning bolt, the sense of, well, you can learn everything, because some people think witchcraft is just, you know, how do you cast a spell, how do you light a candle, how do you do basic ceremony, but there's such mystery to it, there's such a spiritual evolution to it. I don't think you can ever learn everything. I think there's such a depth. So I really want to encourage our listeners to go deeper in whatever you're interested in. If you're interested in it, then there's probably a mystery there to open up and to change you and to help evolve you and to help you evolve the world. So if you have an interest in some aspect of magic, don't think that's it. You know, seek it out. And you might not find it in the witchcraft sections, you know, but to seek out further and direct contact is huge. You know, I'm a big believer in inner teachers, whether it be from the plant realm or the animal realm or the mighty dead or the gods. But, you know, really commune with your inner teachers and ask them what's next. And they'll point you in the right directions.
That's very cool. I had a thought for that.
Sure.
The direct connection is very good. I also think that people should look for their next challenge, not only with the spirits or with themselves. Sort of analyzing where their strengths lie, and then say, "Oh, how can I branch out into this place where I'm a little weaker, and challenge myself to grow in strength?"
Right.
Like, you know, in the spell wise, you know, for me. Talismans have always been challenging because they never worked because I was too disconnected to what I was trying to create. So for me, I find that, you know, I had to work at it until I could get them to work. So people can take that as they will. So
yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people start out and they find what they're good at, and they progress with that. I think that's great, but I think there's a whole body of lore. I think particularly if you want to be a teacher, you have to have a minimum level of competency in all the basics.
Yeah.
You know, you might decide as a teacher that you never really want to focus on talismans, but you know the basics to teach a, you know, a 3-hour class on it for people to say, well, how do talismans work?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's, and you can have the experience to say, it's worked for me this way, not just a theoretical knowledge. I think a good thing too is to realize mentors are so important. You know, to teachers, whether they be spirit teachers or other people, and it might not be formal classes, but people you look to and admire and you have conversations with and inspire you. I mean, some of my strongest mentors have been very welcomed into the community of authors, you know, and I see that as a sisterhood and brotherhood, and everyone tends to think being a metaphysical author, it's all fun and games and everything's very easy, but there's certain challenges that we have that unless you go through it, you never really understand or appreciate. Like any career, I mean, you got your peers out there and they get what you go through. But having other authors that have been doing it longer, both practicing and publishing longer, has been really wonderful. And I've learned so much just in conversations, whether it be over email or over lunch or when we're on a tour or a festival together. And I think it's always good to look for peers and mentors and people who will be honest with you and challenge you and inspire you. You know, I think those, whether they be in the flesh or in spirit, but I think we're never done learning.
No, I don't think we are. Well, with that, we'll say goodbye to our listeners. Bye, listeners!
Goodbye, thank you.
And that was our interview. I hope you enjoyed it, and you enjoyed Voices of the Temple. I'll just get us closed out with our devocation. We thank the Great Spirit and the two who move as one. We thank the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. We thank the Lord and the Lady who move through us and work with us. May we recognize their presence in our lives. Blessed be. Merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be everyone. You've been listening to Voices of the Temple. The contents of this podcast are copyright 2010 of the Temple of Witchcraft. For more information, please visit templeofwitchcraft.org.